And why is it important to think about that? Okay, we all know about physical suffering, but when the Buddha talks about suffering exists, he's mostly talking about the mental suffering, because that really affects even the physical, doesn't it? And some of the sufferings, you know, are obvious, and some are not. And the non-obvious are equally and possibly more harmful. And it's really important to look hard at ourselves and try to figure out what are our negative thoughts. For example, if you're someone who's really an angry person, or you know yourself, you know, you just get angry so easily, well, it's easy to recognize, hey, I'm an angry person. Or, you know, you just don't like to give things away, you know, you just like to hang on to things. You just know you're kind of a tightwad, okay? It's easy to identify that. So if it's easy to identify, it's probably easy to say, hey, I really got to work on that, and kind of recognize when you're having an angry moment or a tightwad moment. But, you know, you got to really, you know, you might think, well, you know what? I'm not an angry, I'm pretty patient person. Or, I'm a pretty generous person. Then what happens when you get into a difficult situation? You know, what if if you say, oh yeah, I'm a really patient person, I'm really kind and quiet, you know? What if someone went up and, you know, pushed you out of the way, or slapped you? You know, how would you react? That's when you find out how patient you really are, how non-angry you really are. And, you know, it can be quite a surprise sometimes. And so those are the situations, those are the things that you really need to look at yourself very closely. You know, like when you're in traffic, you know, oh, I'm a very calm, quiet person, but somebody cuts you off, you know, oh, you start getting a little upset. Those are the moments when you have to catch yourself and go, boy, you know, I've got some work to do, because this is really going to cause me a problem if I don't get a hold of it. Okay. Next, the second noble truth we talked about was those negative feelings have a cause. Okay, so what are the causes? It's also called the afflictive emotions, which is a really great name for it, isn't it? Afflictive emotions, and also called negative emotions, because they really do, they are afflictions, right? They're in the six of them are ignorance, attachment, anger, pride, doubt, and wrong view. Let's review what they mean. Now, ignorance does not mean stupid, okay? Ignorance, in the Buddhist terms, means you are not aware of how things really are. And it's a really hard one to learn. It takes many lifetimes to really understand how things really are, what the natural order of things, according to what the Buddha meant. It's really tough. But that is the root source of all of the other things. And that's the thing that we're working on when we're working on anything. Attachment is very difficult. Okay? Actually, I should have put ignorance, anger, and attachment, because after ignorance, which is not knowing how things really work, anger is really the most destructive one. A moment of anger can destroy so much positive energy. And I guess a lot of things described it last week is it's like you have water with dirt on the bottom and you take a stick and stir it up. It just pollutes everything, okay? Anger is a really, really difficult problem. And the next, attachment is very difficult, because it's in the nature of being human. You know, just being a human being, we're going to be attached to wanting a warm home on a cold night, or a cool house on a hot night, or wanting nice clothes and good food. You know, it's just kind of a natural human tendency. But what really makes attachment difficult is when it doesn't get what it wants. And what is attachment that doesn't get what it wants? Exactly. It turns into anger. So you see, all these things are really connected together, aren't they? So the next one's pride. You know, actually, we're not going to, we never did get into pride, doubt, and wrong view very deeply because we just don't really have enough time. And they're not as important as the first three, the ignorant, attachment, and anger. Okay. But the good news, all of these are in the mind and can be changed. All right. So next, we're going to review, what does the mind mean in Buddhism? The mind, the definition of mind in Buddhism is that it has two qualities of clearness and awareness, and its function is to know. That's the definition. Okay? It is not the same as what we generally think of in the West, of the mind is what you just think with, your brain. Okay? It's not the same. It includes that, but it's not, that's not what it is. The terms mind and consciousness are interchangeable in Buddhism, but it's distinct from the brain, which is physical. So very loosely, we can say that the mind is everything about you that is not physical. It's what some people might describe as emotion, thought, perception, soul, all of those things that are not physical is what mind means in Buddhism. So in Buddhism, there is not a separation between emotion and thought. Okay? I'm sure you've all heard someone say, and at times have felt yourself, I know that's right, but it just makes me so mad. I can't help myself. I can't help how I feel. That's absolutely incorrect according to Buddhism. You can always help how you feel because what we call feelings are perceptions, an attitude, a way of thinking that comes from what you are thinking. Okay, so there's not a separation, there's not a distinction between emotion and thought. Although, because we're in the West, sometimes we'll talk about, use the word emotion, but really it's all the same thing. But it's important to remember that your mind is continually changing. Okay, so they describe it like a river that's flowing. It's always changing. There's a firm belief in the ability to change our own minds and create the causes of happiness. Okay, are there any questions to this point? Because this is the end of the review, and we're going to start talking a little bit more about the mind. Any questions? Not yet, okay? This is a good class. Y'all pay attention last week, so this review is good, huh? All right. So, first of all, I'm going to remind you again, as you know, that we are just barely scratching the surface, and my prayer is, and, you know, even forgot to set the intention tonight. I really apologize, but our intention together is to try and learn some ideas here that provide food for thought, that will help enhance whatever practice we already have, and if you don't have one that's working, that maybe this could be a way that you can follow to help you with your life, to have a calmer, more peaceful mind. But each one of these topics, just mind, rebirth, karma, each one of those is a 5-week class. Just each one, mind, you have 5 weeks in discovering Buddhism, and that's a beginning class. Okay? Rebirth, there's a 5-week class on discovering Buddhism on just rebirth, and it's a beginning class. So like this is like a child's book, you know, a 3-page Outside there, I was looking at the story of Siddhartha in a children's book. It's like 5 pages long. It's like, yeah, there's like volumes written about Siddhartha, right? So I hope that I can communicate some coherent thoughts to you that can help. So please ask questions, you know, if you have them. So let's get back to this. We're trying now to connect the ideas of the Buddhist idea definition of mind with rebirth and karma. Okay? So as we've mentioned before, a basic principle in Buddhism is that everything has a cause. There's no such thing as spontaneous generation, right? Everything comes from something else, and everything will become something else. It's continuous. The mind is not physical, so can only be produced by something that is non-physical. Each moment of mind came from the previous moment, from the previous moment, from the previous moment. And this moment of mind will create the next one, and that'll create the next one, and that'll create the next one. It's always changing. And then this continuity of consciousness is the basis for the Buddhist belief in rebirth. I think we mentioned it in the first class, how, you know, when you look at your body, okay, before your body was an adult, it was a young adult, it was a teenager, it was a child, a toddler, a baby, a fetus, a cell, and then what was it before that? You know, atoms somewhere? I don't really know, but it came from something, right? You know, that there's songs about we are stardust, we are part of the devil's pardon. I don't know what that song is, but, you know, from dust to dust, you know, we are made of stardust. We're made of something that was there before that first cell. And when our bodies get older and die and decay some more, it's going to turn back into dust and atoms or something, right? So, that physical comes from something physical and will become something else physical, and as far as we know, had no beginning and has no end, none that we can discern right now, right? So the same with the mind. The mind is not physical, so it can't come from something physical. So, where does it come from? It comes from the previous moment of mind. It's a tough one, isn't it? It's still kind of hard for me to think about that, but I guess I'm thinking it with my mind, right? Okay. So, all right. So, rebirth, let's see. Here's the next slide. Okay. So, what is rebirth and that funny word, samsara? Okay, rebirth is that stream of subtle mind energy that is reestablished in a new body, conditioned by the karmas of previous lives. And we're going to talk about what karma is later, okay? But that is what rebirth is. And the belief is that, you know, this mind, which is non-physical, uses the support of physical bodies from one lifetime to another, you know, for different purpose. So the body that you had before this one could have been another human body. It could have theoretically been another animal. It could have been some being on another planet, okay? But it can. There is also such thing as beings that are seen and unseen. Okay, so it could have been some kind of a body that is not visible to our kind of human eyes. Okay, and after this body, your mind stream can enter some other kind of a body. Samsara is the cyclic existence, this beginningless recurring cycle of death and rebirth that is under the control of delusion and karma and fraught with suffering. And the suffering is the ignorance and the attachment and anger that we all carry with us from one life to another, hopefully working really hard to eliminate the causes that create the continued cycle of this ignorance and anger and attachment. The opposite word for samsara is nirvana. Okay, we're not getting to that word yet, but nirvana means you have burned up or eliminated every speck of negative karma, every single speck, and so that you have acquired perfect wisdom and compassion. Okay, so it's a really great place to go, and it'll be a while before I get there. Okay, so karma. What does karma mean? It means action. It's the working of cause and effect whereby positive or virtuous actions produce happiness and negative non-virtuous actions produce suffering. Okay, now, karma is really kind of difficult to explain, especially so briefly here. So I'm going to read an excerpt from an article written by Lama Zopa Rinpoche that I hope will help explain what karma is. And this is actually an excerpt taken from the book, Buddhism in a Nutshell. So the whole thing is in there. So let me read this to you, and then we can talk about it. Karma is the action of the mind, the intention that moves us toward an object and which in turn creates verbal or physical actions. There are three types of karma: virtuous, non-virtuous, and changeable. Changeable is also sometimes called neutral. Virtuous karma always brings happiness, whereas non-virtuous karma, any action done with greed or hatred or ignorance, brings suffering. We can quite easily see this if we remain conscious of all our actions and check why we do the things we do. Then, through meditation and investigation, we can develop our wisdom and learn to control and destroy the negative impulses that arise and control us. Without that awareness, there's no way we can be in control. Karma relates closely to the law of cause and effect that we see operating all the time in the physical world. Everything in the external physical world is a product of cause and effect, so it is illogical to think that the internal environment of the mind is any different. Just as the plant comes from the seed, so every experience of happiness and suffering comes from the imprints left on the mind from some previous action. Everything we say or do is determined by the intention behind the act. So everything comes from the mind, from the karmic seeds that are on our mind streams. Every aspect of the environment that we're reborn into, our body, and the mind with all its propensities and emotions, all of this is completely the result of karma. Our present suffering is dependent on our previous karma, but our future happiness is dependent on our present karma, the motivation that we have for all the actions we are doing now. Positive actions only come from positive motivations. If an action was motivated by a selfish mind, it is negative. If it's motivated by a generous, beneficial mind, it is positive. Therefore, in Buddhism, The main emphasis is on taking care of the mind, observing the mind, and keeping it pure. Now, I wanted to take a moment to say here, when we're talking about karma, how I was listening to a lecture by Venerable Robina Corton. I don't know if any of you have ever had an opportunity to hear this amazing teacher. She usually comes by Kadampa Center about once a year, a little bit more than a year. I don't know when her next visit is, but I think the beginning of 2016, I'm not sure. But if she ever comes around, come and listen to her teachings. They're amazing. So I was listening to one of her lectures on karma and wanted to point out something that she mentioned of how this idea of karma, this idea of the Buddhist definition of the mind and the continuous mind stream and karma, cause and effect, it's really dramatically different from the common Western view of, how many times have you ever heard this? I never asked to be born. This stuff just happens to me. Why did this happen to me? Okay? I didn't ask to be here. You know, haven't we all heard that? Haven't we all felt that at one time or another? You know, we think, she describes it as a very dualistic way of thinking of, you know, somehow we got plunked on this earth and think all these things happen to us, yet we don't think we're very powerful, or, you know, we think that, you know, we kind of deserve all the good stuff, or don't even think about where the good stuff comes from. You know, why do we happen to be born human? Why are we living in this country where right now, anyway, we're not at war? You know, there's not somebody knocking down our doors and coming at us with a rifle at our head. You know, like, how do we end up in a life like this? You know, we're lucky that we have all the good conditions that we have, that we all have the good fortune to have the means to even just come here tonight. The leisure, really, of being able to work on our minds. There are many people in the world who don't have that leisure. They're really busy just staying alive, right? Walking 7 miles to get a cup of dirty water to drink, right? And we're so fortunate. Why are we so fortunate? But then why do we have these jealousies and angers and confusions, too? You know, like, why? Well, the explanation of karma, the mind, and karma, and positive and negative karma, means that we have created the situation. The Tibetans say that just the fact of being born into a human life with the physical support of a brain to help us to think and focus and concentrate and study ourselves and make changes is a result of vast positive merit that you've done in the past. So the thought that we are not worthy of anything, that we're, you know, I'm not very valuable, is a totally ignorant, meaning not seeing things the way they are, point of view, according to Buddhist philosophy, that you should very much, when you start feeling down and not worthy, think, wow, I really am so grateful. I thank my previous self for all the positive merit that put me in this body, giving me this ability to use these tools to work on myself and to be a peaceful, compassionate person. And just by being that will automatically help the person next to us and our family and our neighbors and then the community and the world. So we can all do this. But it's really, when you think about it, a dramatically different perspective than the usual, I explained to you before, I was brought up Catholic. You know, the Christian way of thinking of it is God or somebody out there made you. You were nothing, and then all of a sudden, plunk, there you are. You know, you're a human being. And, you know, why did this happen? Well, God has a plan. And I'm don't mean to be disrespectful of that, because, you know, it can be a very valid way of thinking. If it's a way of thinking that helps you, it's the right way of thinking for you. Nobody says that you can or should or have to be a Buddhist. You know, it's not right for everybody. But if that other way of thinking leaves you feeling like lost, like can't explain, well, maybe it's time to have a different way of thinking. But it is different. You know, it gives you a lot of responsibility, but it also gives you a lot of control. And here's something that's very important that Venerable Rabina pointed out. He says that when we hear about karma, about how we create our own suffering, we create our own problems, we hear it as punishment. Like, oh, well, of course that's going to happen to you. Look how stupid you were. Or, you know, like, you know, you must, if you're in this bad situation, well, you did something to make yourself be in this bad situation, right? We hear it as punishment because our suffering mind, our ignorant mind, views everything. We judge everything. This is good. This is bad. But because we are seeing it through our own perception of what is good and bad, somebody else looking at it might judge it completely differently. So in the teachings of the Buddha, this cause and effect, none of it is good or bad. It just is. Okay, is a ball, an apple bad because it gets loose from the tree and falls to the ground? Is it bad because it fell to the ground? It's gravity. It's just the way it is. If it's going to get loose, it's going to fall to the ground. It's not going to fall up. It's not just going to hover there. It's going to fall because it's a natural law. Well, that's what the Buddha is saying what karma is. It's just a natural law. If you have a negative attitude, a negative thought, therefore a negative attitude, a negative perception, which causes your body, speech, and mind to do or say something that's negative, well, you're going to have a negative outcome. It's just a law, you know? So, let me stop right here and see, do you have any questions or comments to make? Right here, David. Thank you for waiting for the microphone, because it's nice when everybody can hear the question, because if one person has a question, you know other people do.
Yeah, well, I mean, when you talk about this mind stream and the previous mind that I guess your body inherits, if that's the correct way to think about it. But can that be, is that in Buddhism, can that be, if that mind stream, can it be, is it neutral when it is passed on or inherited, or can it be negative or positive, or how is that seen?
Okay, very good question. The mind stream, there is actually three levels of thought, mind. There's the gross mind, which is what we think of as our thinker, our brain, our conscious thoughts. There's the subtle mind, which is what receives some imprints and messages from our active mind, and usually we recognize as being dreams, instincts, okay? And then there's that very subtle mind, which is even as different from between mind and subconscious, what we call subconscious or subtle mind, and it's even more subtle than that. And it receives the imprints that get filtered down, both positive and negative. And we kind of think of them as seeds that are dropped on this mind stream, okay, that go from one life to another. So the negative thoughts and actions kind of drop a little negative seed or positive seed or a neutral one, okay, that will go on into the next life. And depending on what you act on or kind of attitudes you work to develop will either kill that little negative seed or give it the conditions to bloom, okay? So the positive and the negative seeds do carry on from one lifetime to another.
They can be changed, I guess.
Yes, and we're
going to
talk about that later,
yeah.
But I'll give you a little preview. There are two ways to change your karma, okay? Okay, so say you've got, let's use the analogy of seeds. And again, I hope I'm not confusing or misleading you, but trying to help me tell you something. Well, picture karma as seeds. And you have a packet of seeds, good and bad ones, okay? And coming along, and there you can ripen a seed by watering it, by encouraging it, you know, putting it in fertile soil, letting it grow, or you can kill that seed before it's had a chance to ripen. And the two ways that you can change karma is anger can change it in a bad way. The anger can really diminish the conditions for the positive seeds to grow and encourage those negative ones. Gives a little sun and water, you know, and air to grow. Or the other way is purification. And purification can help to diminish or destroy the negative seeds and not allow them to grow. And those are two things that we're going to talk about later tonight or might have to carry to the next class. But anyway, just to know that there's this continuity of karmic seeds that go along, and they're either going to be developed or they're going to pass away, okay? And another way in which karma is destroyed, I guess you can say, is they say your karma is exhausted as it happens. My understanding of this, and I hope I'm not misleading you. If there's any error, it's my own perception, so I hope I'm not misleading you. But my understanding of karma is anything that's good that's happening to you, like right in this moment, okay, I'm in a good, nice room with good people, and I've got nice clothes, and I'm well fed. You know, all these things that are happening at this moment are all the results of some positive karmic seed that happened before, and I'm exhausting it at this moment. I'm using up that good seed, but like for the next moment, it depends on what I'm doing right now with that to create a new seed. Okay, so it's like a series of moments, but a moment in Buddhism, there's like thousands of moments in one snap of a finger. So every single moment, you're exhausting some positive or negative, but you're creating more positive or negative. And it's interesting to kind of think about that for a while. Let's give an illustration of this. Say, okay, we all know of people who have had the opportunity of a lot of wealth, you know, a lot of money. Well, the Buddhists would say they have a lot of money right now because in some past lives they were very, very generous. So this karmic seeds of generosity in some past lifetime have ripened now to have give them a lot of money right at this moment. So they are exhausting that positive karma that they've developed from the generosity by having a lot of money right now. But how about from now on? Okay, so if they take that money and they use it to buy diamonds and furs and, you know, like take advantage of workers to work hard for them for no money and don't pay them, you know, and, you know, just get all this kind of stuff, you know, if we've all read about these really selfish-sounding people, you know, that we perceive as being selfish, okay, because it's all our perceptions too, right? But just for the sake of argument, say they're using the money very selfishly, they're not having compassion for other people, you know, all they're thinking about is themselves. Well, what kind of karma do you think that they're accumulating for the future? Probably not very good, right? As opposed to another person, I will use the example like of the Gates, the Bill and Melinda Gates. You know, I don't know what their personal lives are, but my perception of them is, you know, they have a lot of money, but what are they doing with that money? Well, they, even though they use enough, some of their money to enjoy a good life themselves, which is perfectly fine, it's not a problem. Buddhism does not say you should suffer or deprive yourself. It's fine to enjoy the fruits of the positive karmas that you have, that have given you the opportunities you have. But then it's on you to then use that wisely and compassionately to develop that positive karma for the future. So, you know, like with the Gates, you know, what are they doing with their money? You know, they're looking around the world, looking for situations in which people need some help and trying to help them wisely, okay? So that's just a rough illustration of how karma works. Does anybody have any questions? Am I confusing anybody? David?
Well, you talk about this moment is influenced by the past moments that we carry forward, but that's a lot of stuff. I mean, a lot of lives to pack into this moment. I mean, does that filter through, or is everything piled into one moment from the past negative and positive seeds?
Okay, I'm going to try and answer that to the best of my ability, okay? And I hope I'm not misleading you, but my understanding is that the karma, we are in this, in our common day, everyday language, we think of karma like the song of the Beatles, you know, the instant karma's going to get you, okay? We think that, you know, if you do something good today, it's going to be good tomorrow. And, you know, that's a good way of thinking, and we do see those results immediately. But in the Buddhist way of thinking, actually, the karmic seeds have been being created from eternally before us and will go on for a long time after us. And many of the karmic seeds that we are benefiting from or suffering from in this life were probably created many, many lifetimes ago. And we cannot possibly use up all the positive and negative karmas seeds that have been created from eternally before us. So we're benefiting from and suffering from a part of them in this suit that we're wearing right now. And then whatever, so that's why it's really important and urgent for us to work very hard at trying to study whatever it is that we can take care of right now, to study what are these negativities, these afflictive emotions is a better word, okay? These afflictive emotions that we talked about. Really try and figure out what it is that we have right now that we can try and take care of, okay? Because it's likely that we're not going to be able to figure out and take care of all of them in this lifetime, so we better work hard to take care of as many as we can and to create as much positive karma, positive seeds for our next life, whatever it is, while we have this opportunity in this very precious human life. Okay? Does that help? And I'm going to share something with you. Maybe I shouldn't because it's a little off color, but one time I read an article where Jesse Gellick was giving an interview to someone. It was an article in the Mandala magazine, which is the FPMT magazine, and they were talking about karma, and you know, he says much of the karma that you're benefiting or suffering from was from lifetimes before, and the person said, you know, it just doesn't seem fair that I'm suffering from something that I did three lifetimes ago. And Geshe-la said, yeah, you know, it's just like farting in your sleep, you know. You didn't know you did it, but you wake up with a smell. So, I don't know, that's kind of silly. But all right. Any more questions? Yeah. All right. Four laws of karma. So we actually are moving along pretty well here. Let's see if I missed any notes. Okay. We probably won't go into this very deeply because, you know, that they're pretty much self-explanatory. So we already talked about how karma is definite. Virtuous actions always produce happiness. Non-virtuous thoughts always produce suffering. Is there any question about that? Okay, nothing comes from nothing. Like always produces like. Number two, karma expands over time. What does that mean? Any clues? Anybody? I bet Jim knows. I'm putting him on the spot. What? Steve's not paying attention. Oh. Jim is a longtime member and friend, so I just had to embarrass him. Sorry. Okay, karma expands over time. What does that mean? Well, again, you know, I hope that I'm not misleading you. I hope I'm understanding it correctly myself. But my understanding of what that means is, suppose, you know, you're at the office and, you know, you're a really honest person and you know that none of the stuff at the office belongs to you, belongs to the office. But you say, oh, you know, I just really need a couple of paper clips, you know. You know, they won't mind. It's okay if I take a couple of paper clips. Then, you know, gosh, you know, paper, you know, maybe they've got a lot of pens, you know, they didn't miss the paper clips, so, you know, maybe I take a couple pens and a couple pads of paper, and it, somehow, it, when you let yourself do one thing, it kind of makes you more susceptible to doing it a little bit more and more and more. Same with a good thing, you know. Oh, you held the door one time for someone and they smiled and thanked you and boy, that felt pretty nice. So gosh, you know, it's easier to do it another time and it feels even nicer. You know, so it kind of opens the gateway and expands your propensity toward doing those things. So that's one way in which I take the meaning of expanding. But another way that you might think about karma expands over time is that old, what's that story? Somebody with a horrible, no good day. It's a little children. Thank you. Yes, Alexander and the horrible, no good, bad day. Okay, so, you know, you're having a bad day, and, you know, you just grump to somebody else, or you kick the door, and, you know, whoever's around you, oh, boy, that feels really bad. So it sets them off in a bad mood, and then they go and do something, you know, that's impatient or bad. So it kind of, you know, just your own moment of negative, afflictive emotion that you think just is yourself really, you know, is a ripple that goes out and out and out. So there's many different ways in which you can think of karma expanding over time, right? So that's my understanding. It might be wrong, but I think it helps me, so I hope it will help you as well. And if you find a different definition, if Geshe-la says it, that's the right one. Okay, third, you cannot experience the result without creating the cause. So, things don't just happen to you. That's the non-Buddhist way of thinking is, you know, things can be random, or things just happen to you, it's not your fault. Well, again, I repeat what I said before. Blame and praise are not really part of the way things really are. Things just happen. They're really just the law of things. So if something that you perceive to be a bad thing happens to you, there's probably, if you think back, well, why did this happen? And, you know, you could probably even in this lifetime think back to some cause and effect things that if you had done one thing differently in the past, maybe you wouldn't have had the outcome that you have now. But that's not really the Buddhist way of thinking. That's a good way to apply some of this thought. But it could have been something even in a past life that you've done, and that karmic seed is ripening in this life. But does it mean that, you know, you have to suffer from it? No, it means it's in the attitude. Remember, you think about, okay, well, this thing happened. I can react badly to it and create more negative, afflictive emotions, or I can calm down and say, okay, this thing happened. How can I change it? It really gives you a lot of control, a lot of responsibility for your own life and in your own mind, but also a lot of control. And, you know, this is interesting that I just somehow it's reminding me about Dan Gilbert, who I mentioned in another class of being a researcher in the art of happiness or the science of happiness. He said that one of the things that keeps us from being happy is that we are notoriously bad at guessing how we are going to feel in the future. So, for example, you know, say you really think that a lot of money is going to make you happy, and one day you win the lottery. So, you know, you go and, well, first you go and you buy your ticket and you think, oh man, if I win that $30 million, I'm going to buy a great house and I'm going to a yacht and I'm going to, you know, have all these expensive clothes. And I'm going to be so happy. I'm going to have a Maserati. I'm going to be so happy. And then you actually look at people who have won the $30 million and you ask them, did that money make you as happy as you thought it would? And almost unilaterally they say, no, it actually created more misery for me. I almost wish I never won it. You know, sure, it got them some good stuff and made them happy temporarily, but really they imagined that they were going to be much happier than they actually turned out to be. On the other hand, you know, he interviewed, and we all know people who have, say, thought, oh my God, if I lose my job, what am I going to do? It's going to be devastating. you know, how am I going to survive? I lose my job, or they're diagnosed with a critical illness. Oh my gosh, this life is over. But in actual fact, when he's gone and interviewed those people later, they say, you know what? Losing that job turned out to be the best thing because it forced me to do something that I really love or to develop new skills. You know, I didn't realize what a rut I was in until I lost that job, and now, you know, it just freed me up to do something. Now, of course, temporarily it was devastating, but ultimately they found strength. It could go another way, you know, depending on what your attitude is. But many people, they never would have guessed that it would have been a good thing for them. I have a friend, actually, who, he was a physician and, had a really good life with it and a child and all. And, one day she kind of woke up and was paralyzed. She couldn't move. And turned out she had some kind of a tumor on her spine that, you know, they operated on, but then that caused her to, you know, she had brain damage. She had to learn how to speak again and walk again. And it's like, oh my gosh, she went from being a successful pediatrician to having this devastating illness that, you know, just stopped her whole life and affected her family. You know, you'd think that would be a really terrible thing. And I was talking to her, and she said, you know, I'm really grateful that this happened, because before, you know, I felt like, you know, I worked really hard, and people just bothered me. You know, I didn't want to talk to anyone when I wasn't working. And, you know, and she said, and this illness has just opened me up to realize how many really nice people there are in the world. People just flock to help me and offer me assistance. And, you know, and she works out in her garden, and people stop by and talk to her. She never would have done those things before. And she perceives it as one of the best things. It would be better if she could have learned all those things without the illness. But, you know, the point of it is, we are really bad at guessing at what's going to make us happy and what's going to make us unhappy. So if we just can think in terms of the karma of trying to make each moment the best one, then we know from this law of karma that the next one is going to be good and ultimately will be good. Four. Karma is never lost. Actions always produce a result unless the karmic imprints are purified or destroyed, okay, or exhausted, which is what we were just talking about before. You know, like each moment of time, you are exhausting either the positive or the negative seeds that you have created in the past. So that one's used up, so you've got to make a new one. And is this new one going to be positive or negative? Is it going to be happy, or is it going to be afflictive? It's always up to us at every moment of mind. Or if you sense that there's a negative one in there, don't let it ripen. Work at purifying it. And we're going to talk about purification later. Any questions about this or comments? David? Or who's got the microphone?
Is there such a concept of luck, then, in the Buddhist sense?
No. No, there's not. Everything comes from something. It doesn't just happen to you. It maybe, you know, if you have a really wonderful life, and then like the one unlucky thing happens to you, and you can't figure out, well, what did I do to deserve this? It's probably karmic seed from some other lifetime that's choosing to ripen then. And depending on what you do with it, you can snuff it out, or you can give it fertilizer. David, right here, please.
Quick question. How do you prevent having attachment to action at saying you're only doing good things because you're hoping good things will happen to you?
Prevent attachment to wishing for good things?
Well, say you're being being generous in your actions. Like, you don't want to just be saying I'm being nice to people because I hope nice things happen to me. And if it doesn't happen, then there's that anger from...
I see. Okay. Well, that's a very good question, and there are techniques in Buddhism to help to change that, but it takes a lot of work. First of all, remember that it is not against the Buddhist philosophy to want nice things, okay, to want to be comfortable. It's part of our human nature. It's part of the samsaric life, you know, this nature of just being born in a human body, okay, that we want to be comfortable, you know, but to feel like if I don't get that really nice car or that nice house, I'm going to be devastated. That's what we try to mitigate by studying our minds, okay, so that if you don't get it, it's not sour grapes. It doesn't make you angry that you didn't get it. You say, well, okay, this didn't work. Let's try something else. Let's keep the positive attitude and the positive thoughts and go on. And, you know, try to reduce the amount of anger or jealousy that you might have. I very briefly mentioned in the first class, when we were going through the Four Noble Causes, and the last one said, okay, the first one is suffering exists, the second one is that it has a cause, the root afflictions, the third one is that it can be changed, and the fourth one is there is a means to do it, okay? And we talked about how there are many different ways in Buddhism that you can use to train your mind. One of them is called the Lam Rim. Lam Rim means graduated path. It's actually sort of like a curriculum that Lama Tsongkhapa, this guy in the middle here, many years ago, wrote to help us to develop thoughts, attitudes to improve our chances of eliminating negative thoughts, okay? And very briefly, is the first thing, of course, talks about the importance of a teacher. And we talked about how, you know, it's very helpful to have written guidebooks to teach us, but it's much more valuable to have an actual teacher to help you interpret and answer questions. And then how to be a good student, because even with the best teacher, with the best books, with the best everything, if you don't have the mindset of wanting to learn and opening your mind and taking the time to think about things, then nothing is going to work, okay? Then the next kind of things is to think about the precious human life, you know, how important this life is, this body, this mind that you have, the opportunities that you have, and not to waste it, of to improve your mindset. Okay, and then you think about interdependence, how we're all interdependent in one another. You know, it goes on and on, and it teaches you with one thought at a time of how to think about yourself and the world around you and how things are, and it's meant to help improve that. There are other ways, like there's the six perfections. There's books about six perfections of generosity and patience and you know, I can't think of the other ones right now, but there's six really good ones. So you could study on that. You know, take a book and think about, you know, each of those perfections and how to apply them to your life. So there are many different ways of learning these skills, but it takes a lot of time and effort. Anything else? Did that help you?
Yeah.
Kind of, huh? And I'm sorry? Oh, yes. Yeah, okay. The story was, you know, it actually, that story, it kind of illustrates how we put judgments on things, right? Yeah. Does everybody remember the story about the guy and the horse? Okay. All right. So let's go on here. Now this one here, the four aspects of karma. It's 8:15. Okay, we're really brushing over these things because, again, like I said, each one of these things is a whole course. So this is, we're just brushing through. I never imagined that we'd even get this far tonight, but that's good. Okay, four aspects of karma. And we're not going to get too deep into this because I kind of find it hard to understand and explain myself, but I thought I would just put this in front of you so you know that karma is not a really simple thing. Okay, we can think of it simply, but it's really very complex and takes a lifetime of study. Okay, the ripening result of karma determines the kind of rebirth we take. We all know that we can be reborn as humans, but it's kind of hard for us to bite off and chew the thought that, you know, we could, in our next life, be reborn as a lion or a cockroach or something else. And you know what? You don't have to believe that. Okay, so I kind of use the analogy of, you know, someone says to you, you know what? This 20-ton airplane can fly in the sky. You go, how can that be possible? How can something that big and heavy float in the sky, right? Well, you don't try to understand it, the whole thing all at once. Okay, first you've got to, you know, you will say, well, let's see, how does gravity work? You know, how does an engine work? How does propulsion work? Does air affect the way wings move or something, you know, like on and on. You can't try and understand the whole thing all at once. So you don't have to even try to believe that you might be a cockroach in the next life or you were a rat in the last life or something, you know. That's too much for our brains to try and handle right now. But if you just use, you know, break it down and start with, okay, well, karma means this will cause that. Just experiment with that little beginning thought of, you know, is it gravity? Will that apple, if that apple disengages from the branch, is it going to go down or afloat? You know, no, I'm going to try and understand just gravity. Okay, and then how does it's going to be years before I can get into the physics of how something as big as an airplane can react against gravity to go up in the air, right? So one little step at a time. Okay, the possessed result is the type of environment we're born into. Okay, so our past karma has ripened into the fact that we're a human being. Well, why am I a human being in Raleigh, North Carolina at the Kadampa Center instead of being in Rwanda or Siberia or, you know, or some palace in Dubai, you know? So it's something in our karma that has influenced that. Experiencing the result similar to the cause. You're robbed because you stole. Some, you know, like I mentioned before, the belief is that, you know, if you have a lot of wealth in this life. You probably were very generous in some past life. If people don't believe what you say, you know, you try to tell people things and no one believes you, even though you're telling the truth. Well, they'd say that in some past life, you must have been a big fat liar. So in this life, even if you try to tell the truth, nobody's going to believe you. Okay? So that's what that means. Creating the result similar to the cause. You steal because you stole. It creates a tendency. That's sort of like we were talking about in the office, you know. You know, something in your... Some people feel like it's okay to take stuff. You know, it's fair. You know, it's okay to take things, and nobody, you know, who does it really belong to? You know, I earned it. You know, like, I'll just take it. You know, they tend to do that. And others, you couldn't get them to take a paper clip from the office if you put splinters under the thing and nailed. You know, they just won't do it. Because they don't have that tendency, okay, to do that. Some people, an example that Venerable Rabina often uses is people who like to hunt or to fish. They have the tendency to kill. Now, they're not killing other people, but they still have this desire to hunt or to fish and to kill creatures, and they don't think there's anything wrong with it. Well, the Venerable Rabina would say that in a past life they probably killed, so in this lifetime they have the tendency to want to do that again. Okay, and those are the kinds of tendencies that we talked about earlier that are kind of subtle that you don't realize as a negativity that's affecting your mind in an afflictive way that we need to really study, okay? Hope I'm making some sense. Okay, well, it is 8:25 here. So we are not going to get to the 10 non-virtuous actions, but we will talk about those next time. Remember that next week there is no class. Next Tuesday, February the 3rd, there's going to be a Medicine Buddha Puja. And if you have any curiosity or interest in the what we might call the ritual side of Buddhism, this would be a very interesting thing for you to come to. Now, a puja means a prayer service. Let's see. We're going to do that. Okay. A puja is a prayer service, and the medicine Buddha puja is a service, prayer service that focuses on healing, on physical, emotional, spiritual healing. So when you come, the cushions will be arranged a little differently, and the nuns will be on one side, and you'll all have a prayer book that you could follow along with. This can be said in Tibetan, but usually the medicine puja is said in English, and you follow along the prayers, and they probably won't make a lot of sense to you, and you're following through. But the important thing is to just keep in mind, like when you're spinning the prayer wheel, even if you don't really understand it, remember it's just a tool to be developing and projecting positive thoughts. So even if you don't understand what's going on, just know that everybody that's come here has come with the intention of healing for themselves and for other people. And if you just keep that in mind, it's something that really does appeal to some people, and for other people, it just doesn't, okay? So, but it's if you've never been to a puja, it would be a very interesting and informative thing for you to do. But our next class will be on February the 10th. We'll have two more classes, February the 10th and the 17th. And so next week, we'll try to do the 10 non-virtuous actions and purification. There's two slides that, let's see. Yeah, purification. Yeah, these two things, we're going to do these things. And then we're going to talk some more about the precious human rebirth that we've already talked about a little bit tonight. And the Buddhist view of death. The three scopes. Wow, what's that? The mystery will be solved. And the three principal aspects of the path. They sound kind of boring, but it's really pretty good stuff. So I thank you all so much for your patience and attendance tonight, and I look forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks. If you have any questions in the meantime, remember I can be reached at outreach@kadampadascenter.org. And let's all close with dedicating all the effort that we've made here tonight. We could all be doing something else. Most of you probably had a busy day at work, made the effort to rush home or right here with no dinner or a very quick dinner, and you made the efforts to come here because you want to improve your minds, and the wish, the dedication that we have learned even one thing that causes us to think and maybe make our lives a little more peaceful, our minds a little more calm, and that we pass this extra positive energy that we've developed onto everyone, all the sentient beings around us. Thank you all so much. Good night.